Smoking is generally considered a bad habit. The government has subsequently taken action to discourage its use. It has imposed heavy taxes, permitted little advertising, limited the areas where smoking is allowed, and generally stigmatized this behavior. As a result, the smoking rate has declined dramatically. Gambling also causes social harm, yet here the government has encouraged the growth of casinos and slots, allowed garish advertisements, and created an atmosphere where gambling seems like a harmless entertainment. Not surprisingly, the industry is booming. A curious double standard. Zeus Yagi is an anti-gambling advocate. He's joined me this morning by phone from Alberta. Good morning, Zeus.
Good morning.
I'll start out with asking you for your perspective on gambling. What's the problem with gambling?
The main problem with gambling is it's basically like centering in on a certain population here, the population that basically is attracted to changing their economic situation or whatever. So, I mean, like there's already a hardship that a lot of them are facing to start with. And it's just basically adding one more kick at their circumstances. It makes promises or alleges certain promises that obviously, if you know anything about gambling, they don't get met, or for at least for the masses, they don't get met. So it just creates another burden. Gambling in itself, I mean, was pretty much against the law. There's a provision in the criminal code that has dealt with it. Having the government get involved with it, that's where it really topples the scales for me, at least, in that it winds up putting someone who should be in a fiduciary trust position to be the person that's the sheriff of Nottingham, you know, the one that's creating more of a problem than fixing any. You see a lot of people in Canada right now, some people that have retired, some people that have worked hard or whatever, that get drawn into that, and the consequences are like dire. Quite often they're very, very damaging to society as a whole, to relationships, there's a large number of suicides that have resulted from it, there's bankruptcies, there's a number of social burdens, you know. So that's the main thing, is the amount of damage far outweighs any benefit that is being sold to us.
How much money do governments and casinos in Canada generate from gambling?
There's a number. I mean, these are really kind of like guarded numbers generally. I mean, they'll give you some statistics, but a province like Alberta, I think they were boasting $1.2 billion off of gambling in this province alone. Overall, it's an excessive, like in Canada, I think it's an industry that, again, we call it an industry, but they boast over $11 billion of money that they're making off of slot machines and tables.
What are some of the techniques employed by the gambling industry to lure customers?
Oh, there's quite a number of them. It depends on actually the type of gambling we're talking about. The most offensive I find are the EGMs, or the electronic gambling machines or gaming machines. There's a lot of subliminal priming that's involved in these things. There's a whole psychological aspect in the development of the software. From the types of lights, from the visual representations to what I would categorize as false representations, where most of the time when you'll walk up to the bells and the whistles going on and you'll take a look at the screens, you'll see a lot more representations of payout symbols. Like, for example, jackpots, I'll use that as an example. You'll see where every line has got jackpots flashing by, where the reality of it is they might be an occurrence of 1 out of 256,000. You might see a visual representation of 1 out of 8, you know, so it tends to make someone think that they have a far greater chance than they do. the employment of things like given an illusion. When you're talking about video machines being given the illusion that they're on reels, it has a tendency to make someone assume that the behind that screen is a sprocket, like much like a sprocket would be on a bike, and that there's only so many positions that image can occupy, when in fact, if they were to have it represent it, or accurately represented, it would be probably a sprocket the size of a high-rise.
Interesting. Why are the federal and provincial governments permitting the growth of gambling?
That's what I have a real problem understanding that, because, I mean, short-term, it looks all fine and wonderful, you know, that they could generate money, and but the long-term effects of gambling on any society, on any zone, has already been written. I mean, like, you see what happens. I think that they've become, personally, like, I think that they've become addicted to an easy revenue stream. You've got introduction of gambling here. What it's done is, if you've take a look at some of the tax laws and whatever, you see, like, personal exemptions being whether maybe it's $8,000, $9,000, $10,000. Well, by promoting gambling, what you've done now is you've basically engaged the taxing of a group of untaxable people. You know, so like everybody that wasn't paying what the government was thinking would be their fair share is now into doing that, and they're luring them into it.
So, in a sense, a voluntary tax, but one that's driven by a fairly addictive behavior and false promises.
That's right. That's right.
Now, one of the arguments in favor of permitting casino and slots is that they would generate money for municipalities and governments. How would you respond to that argument?
Well, again, I think it's a very short-term fix, and the economic consequences and the long-term consequences are huge. I think that it's just part of the deceptive and enticement measures that they employ. When you have, it's no different than Al Capone handing a doorman at a club $100 tip. I mean, if you're thinking that he's just so wonderful because he's done that, and that's pretty much what gaming does. That's how I view it. You know, they throw a couple of dollars around here, but the damage is done in the dark. You know, when you have gambling revenue being put into things like soccer clubs or hockey clubs, well, my argument would be that if it was left where it should be, which is basically operated by private interests that are regulated and monitored by the government, you wouldn't have that problem, because you'd have somebody policing it, you'd have somebody watching it, you'd have somebody protecting the public. It's a different thing when you have the government, who is basically the ones that are engaging in that, trying to set regulations. It's just a contradiction.
When gambling addiction is discussed, the focus is often on the gambler. Why is that?
Obfuscation. That's the simple word. It's off. You know, when they talk about, I mean, certainly I'm not advocating that people do not take responsibility for what they do, because everybody should assume some responsibility for the majority of responsibility for some of the choices. However, there's exceptions to that. I mean, the word fiduciary trust leaps at me bounds with respect to what the government is doing by engaging in gambling. It's just and doing a very, very high promotion of the gambling. You see, like when you have Gamblers Anonymous groups or ADAC or some of these things that are being funded by the mayor, by the same industry that's causing a lot of the problems, when they know that they're employing certain things that are causing the problem, when they know that if they have a gambling device that isn't quite performing to the numbers, well, they'll do the tweaks. They'll make it a little more attractive. Like, for example, the introduction of penny machines, five-cent slot machines. It's not because you don't lose the same amount of money. It just gives the appearance that you're not quite going to take the same hit that you would if you were playing a dollar machine. But at the end of the day, you probably do more damage on those smaller denomination machines than the other ones. And basically, it's addictive. And what are they promoting? They're promoting it's entertainment now. I don't know the last time somebody went to a theater and paid $400, $500, $1,000 to watch a movie. I hardly call it entertainment. When somebody does get drawn into it, and yeah, it's a good way out for them not to take any responsibility for any of it by making it their responsibility, you know. But certainly, I think they share in it.
Well, let's put a bit of a face on it. What would be a typical scenario for someone gambling? Is it that they go and spend $20 in an evening, or is it, as you were saying, you know, it's like going to a movie and spending $4.50? What does a typical gambling scenario look like for, you know, for a regular person?
Well, this is the thing here with gambling. I mean, this is not, you will not meet somebody that comes up to you and says, guess what? I really had an incredible time. I went and I lost $100, $200. So the amount of money that people lose, it's usually guarded because of how the whole package has been sold. You know, if you do spend beyond your means or whatever, you're the social misfit. You have the problem. So there's really not a situation where they feel like they have an open ear or a common ear to listen to their problem and address it. They're usually shrouded in shame because they were lured. And no one is going to brag about it, but certainly I do not think if they were to go in and just generally put the $20 in, I don't think we'd have a problem, but that's not what happens. You have... And it doesn't take much to assume here. If you assume that the machines, as they say, pay 90% or 94% or 87%, whatever numbers they choose to use, if you just look at it, well, I'm going to trade you. Every time you give me a dollar, I'll give you 94 cents. Well, it's not going to take that many transactions before you're broke from that 20. So that 20, I think, would be closer to 100 or 200. There's stats that they have that say your average man, woman, and child in Alberta, using this as a model, they say that $600 per person over the course of the year. You know, so if somebody's going there six times, five times, but those are their numbers. I'm sure that it's considerably higher. When you wind up finding out that people have bankrupted their business in a short space of 5 or 6 months, well, that's not $20 at a time. When you find somebody that's taking their entire retirement savings and in 2 years had it to be nothing, well, that's a significant amount. And I've heard stories of $200,000, $300,000 going very quickly.
So it sounds from what you're saying that for some people, the resources that they use aren't It's not their disposable income, but they're going into income or savings that they would need for other purposes.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, to me, there's no question about that. If you wound up having, I mean, if they're talking about problem gamblers or the people that have a problem with how much they spend, if you were to take them out of the equation, I think the gambling industry, as they like to call themselves, would suffer and probably fold.
What can people do if they're concerned about the expansion of gambling? What can they do to oppose that or to make their voices heard?
Well, I certainly think coming out of the shadows would be a good start. You know, I think that a little bit of education in terms of what they're dealing with is quite necessary, because what they're getting is just one side of the spin, the gambling industry spin, and nobody nobody's really talking about it to any degree, and when you do talk about it, there's a strong opposition to it. Without people educating themselves and writing letters and making their experiences known to their elected members and putting pressure on them, I don't see any change coming very soon.
Well, thanks for joining me this morning, Zeus.
No worries.
I've been speaking with Zeus Yagi. He's an anti-gambling advocate, and if you want to learn more about the anti-gambling movement in Canada, you can check out citizenvoice.ca.